Overcoming the Triumph of Doubt. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. And you know what? We want to thank all of you for your patience out there. We are doing everything we can here at WJCT to restore our full broadcast signal as soon as possible. Right now, 89.9 WJCT is broadcasting at low power. Now, here's the situation. Crews have been working around the clock on WJCT's broadcast tower to repair a broken antenna. These guys literally have climbed all the way to the top of the tower, and they are hanging up there, working as fast as they can in high winds and in, frankly, a situation I would never, ever do. I would never climb to the top of a tower like that to repair our signal for all of you. It could rain today, so we're going to have to watch that. But if weather permits, we will take the broadcast off air after this program so that they can continue to fix the problem. In the meantime, you can continue listening to all the shows you love via our live stream at wjct.org/listen. And you can also listen via the WJCT app. We want to thank all of you for your understanding and patience. And if you want to see some cool pictures of the guys working up at the top of the tower, just go to our WJCT Facebook page. It's pretty amazing. In a moment, we will speak with author David Michaels about his new book, The Triumph of Doubt, and we want your calls. It's 549-2937. Then later, exploring the natural beauty of our first coast. It's our look at wild Florida. But first this morning, how corporations are using a variety of tactics to create doubt about science and facts, and this is putting our health and safety at risk. Dr. David Michaels is a former official with OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and the Department of Energy. And he's out with a new book this month showing how players across industries, everyone from the NFL to fossil fuel companies to the makers of opioids, work to create doubt about the truth. And that is to the detriment of us all. Michaels is on the line now with more about his book, The Triumph of Doubt. And Dr. David Michaels, we are so glad to have you on the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I'm very happy to be on the show with you.
And here's our question to callers. How concerned are you about the war on science and facts? Give us a call as we speak with author David Michaels about his book, The Triumph of Doubt. The number to join us is 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaNJax. And our Facebook page is open. You know, it's interesting to learn that you decided to write about this when you saw that a lot of big players were using the same playbook that Big Tobacco used for years, denying the science behind nicotine and that it does kill. There are actually quite a few attorneys here in North Florida who made a lot of money suing those tobacco companies over their lies. So what was it about that playbook that you noticed was happening with other controversies that affect human health and safety?
Well, you know, you could see it very clearly across the board. Obviously, climate change is the one that we talk about most right now. In fact, the local news that was broadcast just 2 minutes ago said that, you know, Senator Marco Rubio maybe is coming around and saying the scientific consensus says that global warming is occurring, climate change is occurring. But for 10 or 15 years, he pretended to buy into the tobacco playbook, which the fossil fuel industry used, saying there's debate. You know, you can't discuss what you're going to do about the problem as long as you're still debating whether the problem exists. And the proof of the problem existing is, of course, based in science. So you see it from the fossil fuel industries, but even as you mentioned, the NFL, when the first cases of the first concussions started becoming quite apparent and odd behavior and really sort of dangerous behavior in some of the football players in the 1990s was seen by the NFL. Did they say, let's really examine this problem? No. They put together, the commissioner nominated or put together a committee he called the Mild Traumatic Brain Injury Committee. And for 10 years, they did virtually nothing. And that delayed essentially recognizing what we now know is a horrendous problem chronic traumatic encephalopathy among football players. So we got 10 more years of these of damaging brains until they stepped up to the plate to do something about it. We see it from the alcohol industry, the sugar industry, the auto industry. It's the same playbook over and over again. And in many cases, it's the same very mercenary scientists who worked for tobacco who now will take the money of almost any industry and issue a report saying the science isn't clear.
Right. And so big corporations hire scientists to essentially muddy the waters, confuse the public about what is the truth.
And it's not even their own scientists. You know, most of the big chemical companies, for example, have terrific scientists who work for them. They hire these special consulting firms that specialize in product defense. And they defend the product, not the truth or science. And, you know, their job is really is to confuse people, to muddy the water. And they sometimes even use those words, like, let's cause confusion.
And this is all to the detriment of everyone's health and safety. Can you give us some really interesting examples of this so people understand the stakes?
Well, certainly opioids. I mean, that's, you know, when the first, when pharma, Purdue Pharma decided to try to market their new oxycodone, this narcotic, they pretended that this is not very addictive. And they took a couple of studies that weren't really studies. They were sort of letters to the editor. And they blew them up and they said, there's really no evidence that this stuff is addictive. And I don't need to tell you what, you know, the end result of that is. Mm-hmm. We have more than 40,000 people a year dying in an epidemic that was seeded by these pharmaceutical companies. The alcohol industry has worked very hard to convince us that moderate drinking is very safe. I mean, it's not. There are certainly risks involved. I don't tell people to stop drinking alcohol. You know, I like a beer after work as much as anybody. But the idea that the alcohol industry has spent a great deal of time opposing and really raising issues about any study that shows that moderate amounts of drinking increase risk of illness or death. I mean, it's nefarious what they do, and they know exactly what they're doing because they hire the same firms to do this.
The same firms across industries get hired over and over again to create seeds of doubt?
Exactly. And, you know, these firms, their business model is to produce whatever report the industry needs. And so they will say whatever, you know, whatever it is. They would lose their businesses if they were asked to look into a new chemical. If they found this chemical is dangerous, they would never get another job from the corporations. And so their job is to do reports, and those reports are given to the EPA or they're given to OSHA. And I saw those when I ran the Occupational Safety and Health Administration under President Obama. We would get reports written by some of these consultants saying things like, you know, we hadn't proven that silica causes silicosis, which is, you know, sort of these, it's a, you know, absolutely ridiculous, outrageous statements. But by issuing a report that says that and then testifying at public hearings, this can delay public health protections by years, really. They know how to manipulate the legal system to use this sort of scientific uncertainty to stop the government from helping protect people or to win these court cases. I mean, the tobacco cases are sort of interesting because tobacco was so successful for so many years. And the only reason we know how they ran their campaign was these lawsuits ended up releasing literally millions of pages of memos and studies. And it was very clear tobacco knew exactly what they were doing. They were hiring scientists to lie.
Mm. It's amazing how easily scientists can be bought off and willfully lied to the public, isn't it?
Well, I don't think it's a lot of them. I think it's a relatively small number. And, you know, they're paid very, very well. I mean, it comes out that some of these scientists get paid, you know, close to a million or in some cases more than $1 million a year to do this work because it's... We're talking about products that have billion-dollar sales, and so that's a small price to pay by a corporation that wants to confuse the public and to slow down federal or state regulation.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. David Michaels. The former OSHA administrator is out with a new book, The Triumph of Doubt, Dark Money and the Science of Deception. Whether it's the NFL, the opioid makers, those that engage in denying the reality of climate change, what are your questions about the war on science? How concerned are you about this tendency of corporations to sow doubt about scientific facts? This endangers our health. It's 549-2937, and we'll go to your calls in just a moment. Now, you left OSHA a couple of years ago, and you have some thoughts about how the Trump administration is employing these tactics. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Yes, it is really discouraging. A lot of the same really corrupt scientists who were outside trying to influence the agencies have been given the agencies to run right now. So this strategy of the tobacco playbook is not just on the outside, but it's on the inside. The best example I could give is a fellow named Tony Cox, who, you know, has worked for many industries. He was the one who actually told OSHA that we hadn't proven that silica causes silicosis. During the Bush administration, the George W. Bush's FDA commissioner looked at this guy's testimony. He was working for Bayer, the German pharmaceutical company at the time. And he said his testimony on some hearing was so, was his credibility was such, his testimony was so unreliable, it was inadmissible. This guy, Dr. Cox, is now the chair of the EPA's Clean Air Science Advisory Committee, the most important advisory committee the EPA has in terms of protecting Americans from air pollution. And he's, of course, saying things like EPA shouldn't do any more to protect people's lungs because the science isn't clear. Of course he's going to say that. That's what he's been saying for 20 years, and that's why he was chosen.
And you believe, too, that the media needs to change its approach in reporting on controversial issues because as journalists, we're trained to try to be as objective as possible and give both sides to any controversial issue. But increasingly, and the example that I like to point out here in Florida is a really salient one for our listeners. There aren't two sides when it comes to climate science. There's the science. And I've made it clear to guests and callers that we won't engage in any climate denialism on this program because there is one side. It's not up for debate anymore. But often journalists feel that they'll be accused of bias if they come down and say, look, this isn't up for debate. This is what the science says.
But Melissa, you have hit the nail on the head. I wish every news organization followed your lead, because that's exactly right. I mean, this idea that you know, you have to find someone to give the other side of the story when the other side is bought and paid for by the corporations responsible for the problem. It's a very dangerous approach. Now, that's beginning to change. I think certainly with climate change, many news organizations are saying, why are we even giving voice to some of these very disreputable marginal scientists who are paid by ExxonMobil or the Koch brothers to make it look like there's not a problem? But it's true across the board, and I think it's hard for reporters to see what's behind a lot of these reports and these comments. But if nothing else, they should be demanding to know who paid for the study and, you know, who's really behind it.
You know, what's amazing, too, is that you would have thought after the tobacco settlements, corporations would have not gone down this road over and over again because they end up paying so much more. They're trying to save money and keep their shareholders happy, I guess. But in the end, they end up paying more because massive lawsuits, punitive damages, class action lawsuits with thousands of plaintiffs. Why does this dynamic keep going on and on and on when in the end it costs them so much more?
Well, it certainly costs some of them. We don't know about the ones that have gotten away with it. But certainly, you know, there are a couple of examples just from the last year that are really striking. I mean, Johnson & Johnson, this iconic American company, makes baby powder. And one of the things I talk about in the book is how Johnson & Johnson and some of their and the trade association that represents cosmetic manufacturers hired the same scientists who work for tobacco to convince a government agency, the National Toxicology Program, not to label talcum powder with asbestos in it as cancer-causing. And the memos, which I talk about in the book, are startling. literally they say, we have to create more confusion. And they were successful. And for many years, no one really knew that talcum powder can have asbestos contamination, a small amount, but certainly you shouldn't be breathing it. So when that when the jury heard about that, and there was a case in St. Louis recently of 22 women with ovarian cancer who alleged their ovarian cancer was caused by exposure to this talcum powder with asbestos in it, the jury awarded each woman $25 million against Johnson & Johnson. But then on top of that, awarded the women a $4 billion punitive damage award against Johnson & Johnson because the jurors were so furious when they saw exactly what Johnson & Johnson had done. And that's lowered the value of Johnson & Johnson by billions of dollars. So I hope corporations see this and they take a lesson, but I'm not sure they're doing that.
Hmm. Let's go to some calls now for Dr. David Michaels. His new book is called The Triumph of Doubt, Dark Money and the Science of Deception. What are your questions, comments? It's 549-2937. Michael is in St. Augustine. Hi, Michael. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a comment that the proliferation of the social network has really come to cause the idiocracy to come to fruition, where people do not look to see if the things that they post on social media are accurate or not. They just want to go with whatever their core beliefs are, and anything that supports it, they will go ahead and espouse that to the world.
Mm. Okay, thanks for that. David Michaels.
Yes, I mean, it's certainly, the social media has made it easier to spread disinformation. I mean, it was always very easy. If you have a lot of money and the best PR people in the country, you can do that. But it's certainly going on now more than ever. And that's why you really need institutions and, credible groups to trust. But, often I'm asked the question, what's an individual to do? How do you know what's right? How do you know what's dangerous? And it's a tough question because we can't expect individuals to look at the multisyllabic chemicals on the side of the shampoo bottle and say which ones of these are safe.
Yeah.
You need the government to do that for you. That's why, in some ways, the biggest, the most effective way to take on this issue of the manufacture of doubt is to vote. To vote for politicians who will want to strengthen our regulatory agencies, to make the EPA, to give the EPA integrity again, and give the Consumer Product Safety Commission and OSHA the strength and integrity to protect people. Because you can, just like, if the bridge that you're driving over is rusting and is in danger of collapsing, you as an individual can't do anything. The government has to do it for you. And this is another example where we'd like to be able to do it ourselves, and you'd like to be able to protect yourself, but we really need help.
Something else you write about is that, in your view, it's not an exaggeration to say that the Trump administration has gutted key regulatory agencies across the federal government. For those that perceive that government is too big, too bloated, what would you say to them?
Well, I mean, we're seeing right now, the retreat of some of the government agencies, especially the Environmental Protection Agency. Air pollution is rising. Enforcement of our clean air laws is disappearing. The our ability to clean up Superfund sites is rapidly diminishing. In the long run, every one of us is going to pay the price for that. There's very little indication that these environmental laws have had a negative effect on the economy or they're sometimes called in Washington job-killing regulations. That's rhetoric that's absolutely unfounded in any sort of empirical research.
549-2937 to join us as we speak with Dr. David Michaels, author of The Triumph of Doubt, Dark Money and the Science of Deception. Scott is calling from downtown. Hi, Scott. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Yes. Research showed that it's really, when it came to using that method, Hitler was the first one who used that method in the world. And then when you come to Jacksonville, you can go to consolidation. Or the Better Jacksonville plan, you can see examples of the same thing that research have shown us over a period of time. Thank you.
Thank you. So this isn't a new tactic, in other words.
That's right. I mean, certainly, you know, lying to the public has been around for a long time. I'm not sure Hitler was the first, but it's certainly, you know, it. But up until President Trump, we had a general expectation that our politicians more or less told us the truth. I mean, they didn't overtly lie in a way that was so obvious. But that's obviously changed.
Here's a comment on our Facebook page from Valerie. What can we do about the lobbyists and the dark money? Just acknowledge it and keep on with the status quo?
Well, we certainly, in terms of understanding, you know, the basic science that we need to understand to know how to protect ourselves, you know, what goes into our food, what goes into our air, we need a different way to have that research done and applied. I mean, the one example that's sort of pretty obvious, I think, right now is e-cigarettes. You know, e-cigarettes were introduced originally as an alternative to combustible cigarettes, which obviously cause lung cancer, heart disease. They're a great advance, but they were marketed very widely to teenagers and young people, and now there are more than 3 million adolescents who regularly use e-cigarettes. There's an oil-based product that gets vaporized, mixed with nicotine and fragrances and flavors, and pulled into their lungs. We don't know what the long-term effect of that is. We just have no idea. But would we trust the tobacco companies to do that research to tell us whether or not it's safe? So what I propose in the book is we set up systems that the companies that make the product that could be harmful, like the Juul company, should pay for the research, but we need it to be done with integrity, and therefore it needs to be done by scientists who they don't choose, that they shouldn't choose the research agenda or the methods or the interpretation of the science. They're responsible for paying for it, but we need to get past trusting their research because there's so much evidence that you can't.
Les is calling from the West Side. Hey, Les, how are you? Go ahead.
Good morning. I just had a question as to what seems to be one of the reasons why they can't hold these scientists and the organizations responsible for the research that they provide.
Yeah, why are scientists allowed to openly disseminate misleading or even completely false information?
Well, first of all, they don't do research. What they often do is they pull together the research. They say, we've reviewed it all, and we think there's too much uncertainty, and therefore don't do anything. You know, it's the First Amendment. They can say whatever they want. The question is, why do we believe them? Why do we even accept their studies in regulatory proceedings or in courts? They should be, you know, looked at as we should be skeptical of them.
I think as a culture, yeah, we have a tendency, if someone has a PhD and they seem to have good credentials, we tend to take them at face value often.
That's right. We understand that corporations need to make decisions or say things in their interest, but we think scientists are above that. And unfortunately, there's this industry to create uncertainty, and that's who's doing it.
Matthew is calling all the way from Miami this morning. Hey, Matthew, good morning to you.
Hey, Melissa, this is Matt. I used to call a lot, and I'm just, you know, happy to be able to catch you guys down here in Miami. But I had two questions, actually. One came from the last one. The first question is, have you looked into cognitive behavioral therapy on, like, a widespread level in order to kind of combat these doubts that they're putting on people? Because ultimately it comes down to labeling someone's thought pattern with, like, a heuristic that anchors into all these other feelings, like you said before, that regulation would cause job loss, which is unfounded, but it sounds good, and it's a very hard thing to combat because it has a good, you know, branding behind it. And then my second one is, you know, there have been instances where people have used the First Amendment in ways that then became illegal. If you look at InfoWars, the Alex guy who went around saying that the Sandy Hook was a complete hoax, mm-hmm, and was eventually sued because of the damage that it caused and forced off the air, and, you know, therefore his power was gone. So is there another instance where, you know, we could kind of use that, you know, shouting fire in a theater example to, you know, snuff these people out? Because ultimately, what they're going to do will snuff the rest of us out. So
yeah, thanks for all that. Yeah, great points from Matt calling all the way from Miami today. Hey, thank you, Matt. David.
Well, you know, one thought is to actually at least put up some sort of website so you could see that the same, you know, if a scientist right now is saying, you know, X chemical really isn't dangerous, you go back and you look at, you know, that they said this 20 times in the past, and they were, you know, when we go back and look at literature, they were wrong. And you go back and look at, you know, they worked for the tobacco industry saying, you know, that tobacco wasn't so dangerous. I think that's probably the most effective thing we can do. I don't know if we could actually legally stop people from saying what they think about different chemicals, but pointing out that, you know, they've been wrong so many times in the past, why should we believe them now?
There is so much more, and there is so much more in this book. I recommend everyone pick it up. It is The Triumph of Doubt, Dark Money, and the Science of Deception. Author Dr. David Michaels on the line for us. And thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, Melissa.
And in a moment, we're getting outside with Lisa Gruba. It's time for Wild Florida. That's next.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
The very best of modern folk and acoustic alternative music tonight on String Theory. Listen to String Theory this evening at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Tune in, find out.
WJCT invites you to join us for an evening with Ari Shapiro on Thursday, April 2nd, award-winning journalist and weekday co-host of All Things Considered, NPR's award-winning afternoon news program, will join WJCT's president and CEO, David McGowan, for an engaging conversation. Visit wjct.org/events for ticket information. Sponsored by the Community Foundation for Northeast Florida.
Welcome back. Well, from hiking the great outdoors to some cool right whale sightings going on right now in our area, master naturalist Lisa Vic Gruba is back to take us outside into a little taste of wild Florida. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
You too.
So what's going on outdoors right about now?
Well, it is still a beautiful time to get outside in Florida. Beautiful time to go out hiking with temperatures in the high, you know, low 70s, no humidity, no bugs. And I have found a great new place I'm dying to tell you about.
Oh, where? Where is it?
So it's named for a exiled Russian prince and princess that once owned it. And it's called Princess Place.
What?
And it is in Flagler County, just at the St. John's County line. It's about an hour south of here. It's 1,000 acres, a little over 1,000 acres. And it was only owned by individuals who lived there. So there's no development, really. I mean, there's a house on it, but it has not been developed. And the whole area is very undeveloped. And it's absolutely gorgeous. It has hardwood forest, freshwater rivers, and salt marshes. So the property is filled with big old live oaks, longleaf pine, magnolias. They've cleared a little bit of the understory around where the house is. But other than that, there's like 7 or 8 hiking trails, but there's a little bit of understory cleared. So you really can just go and wander around.
And understory is what? Underbrush?
Yes, underbrush. So okay. They've left the big old hardwood trees, but they've cleared out some of the underbrush.
And this is a place where you can see wading birds like herons and egrets, eagles' nests, pelicans, cormorants. 20 right. species of birds, so bring binoculars to check yes. out the wild life in wild Florida there.
It is on Pellicer Creek, which feeds into the Matanzas River, and that's the last area in North Florida that has open oyster beds. And we'll talk about oysters in a minute.
Wow.
But yeah, that's where our local oysters come from. And so you have a variety of ecosystems. So you can see anything from wading birds to, you know, wood warblers. In fact, they've documented 20 species of wood warblers there. It's on the Great Florida Birding Trail, and I'll provide a link to that for your website later. And so take your binoculars. There's great birding down there.
So Princess Place at the Flagler St. Johns County line, Lisa says, check it out. Okay. And so this is just a way to get away from it all, but you have some other ideas for how to do that too.
Right. Well, you can hike there, you can kayak there, you can rent kayaks on site. You can bring horses. There's camping, both rustic camping, and there are three cabins. And one of the cabins is ADA accessible. So it has a paved parking pad right in front of it. There's a ramp that goes into it. And it's right on the ADA hiking trail that they have. That's a 3/4 mile long paved hiking trail.
How fun.
So the place is ADA accessible. There's equestrian camping. They have this beautiful old Adirondack-style lodge that the owners lived in. And it was made from all local materials like coquina. And the pillars, the posts, are cypress and pine posts. It's very beautiful, very rustic. They give tours of that on the weekend. But during the week, there are rocking chairs on the porch all across the back. And you can just literally sit in the rocking chairs and look out at Pelliser Creek.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's definitely a rustic, get-away-from-it-all kind of place.
Okay, so you mentioned oysters as well. There are some oyster beds there. Can you buy local oysters in our area?
You can, especially in St. Augustine. The Matanzas River, the Salt River, that's where our open oyster beds are in this area. And so I know there's a place in St. Augustine, Zach's Seafood Market, that only mm-hmm. sells local oysters. You can ask some of the other local seafood markets. But other than that, our beds have been closed. In fact, in Duval County, our beds have been closed since 1998 because of water quality. Now, the city of Jacksonville has been working very hard to improve the water quality, and they've asked the state to reopen those beds. And so the state has been doing some water testing, and they need 2 years of positive results in order to open those beds. And they're pretty close. I think it's going to happen. So that'd be really exciting for Duval County.
That would be. Apalachicola, of course, is known for its oysters, but it would be exciting to have more of them here.
Well, and Apalachicola declined. They, the state of Florida is saying that Alabama and Georgia took too much water out of the river that feeds the Apalachicola. And so they had a collapse in 2012. They used to produce 10% of the country's oyster supply, and now it's just a very, very, very small amount. So they're working to rebuild that. So it would be great in our area if we could get our beds open.
It would. Okay, this is exciting. Right whales, Lisa says, are still off our coasts, and
you can
see them.
They are. They'll be here till right around May, and now we're up to 10 baby whales have been documented.
Where are people seeing them?
Really, you know, not far off the coast at all. They've seen them off of Fernandina. One of the baby whales was off of South Carolina recently, but in general, they've been off of like Fernandina on down a little bit south of here. And in fact, there was a boater who posted a video last week. Somebody was out offshore off of Fernandina, and there was a mother and baby whale, and they sat and videoed it. Now, I don't know how, you know, if they went up to the whale or the whales just surfaced by them, but it's important to remember that by federal law, boats cannot be within 500 yards of the whales. Because,
right.
And they're not just endangered, they're critically endangered. So even though we've had 10 births this season, this year there have been 30 deaths. So we're right now at a net loss. The season's not over, but this is a species that's really really imperiled. And so it's important to stay away from them, to give their space, and to report the right whale sighting when you see them so that they can alert ships and other boats in the area.
You can call 1-877-WHALE-HELP.
That's right.
Okay. We are talking Wild Florida with our contributor, Lisa Grube. You've got some events on your calendar this spring. What are they?
Well, here's one that I just found out about. There is a class tonight down in Cape Canaveral. by the Marine Resources Council Right Whale Monitoring Project. They are training volunteers. So if you want to be a volunteer whale watcher, that might be something that you'd want to go down to tonight. Also, the Ocklawaha River is in drawdown until March 1st. So on March 1st, they close the gates to the Rodman Dam and the reservoir begins to refill. But you still have it takes a couple of weeks for the area to flood out. So you really still have a few weeks to get down there and see the river, the historic Ocklawaha, in its drawdown. Mm-hmm. The springs, you might hear people talking about the lost springs. There are 20 springs that get covered up when the river is dammed up. And when they draw down the river, those springs flow again, and people go to see those springs. And those are the last to fill up. That'll be a couple weeks into March. And there are still some kayak tours. There's a guy, Lars Anderson, with Adventure Outpost, who does kayak tours down there.
Okay. And a few other notes. Saturday, March 7th, there'll be a guided hike at the Guana Reserve.
Yeah,
we'll have links.
Saturday morning. Mm-hmm.
We'll have links to all of this on our website later today. And here is a little music from the Jacksonville-born Florida cracker conservationist Whitey Merkel. He died in November. This is Old Ocklawaha. Do we have this music? I hope we do. Oh, we don't have it. Sorry, Lisa.
Okay, that's all right. We'll post it.
We'll post it. And it's Wild Florida with master naturalist Lisa Vick Gruba with amazing information about getting out and enjoying the beauty of Northeast Florida. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back. It's called Florida's Embassy. The Florida House on Capitol Hill is in our nation's capital, and it sits directly behind the Supreme Court. This weekend, there will be a celebration at the Kummer Museum all about the Florida House. Trustees Heather Moore and Martha Barrett are here to tell us more. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Martha.
And, you know, I'd never heard of this place until you guys contacted me.
Right.
Martha Barrett, let's start with you. This is basically Florida's embassy in Washington, D.C.
Right.
We have our own embassy?
Exactly. And we're the only one. And in fact, Tennessee tried to do it years ago and didn't. But I think Heather's going to give you more information about the embassy, and I'm going to do more of the party.
Okay. You'll talk about the party.
Yes.
Heather, why does the Florida House on Capitol Hill even exist?
Well, it exists, and it's kind of is very appropriate because March being a celebration of women, that former Governor Lawton Childs' wife, Rhea, she actually founded Florida House, and she did that when he was governor. They were visiting D.C. back in the 60s, and they were on Embassy Row, and they were lost, and one of their children said, well, let's go to Florida's embassy. And they said, well, you know, Florida doesn't have an embassy, honey, but, you know, they said it's only for countries. But then when Rhea was in D.C., she was walking around by the Supreme Court. She saw this home and she had this idea. We need to create an embassy for Florida. So what we do really is we connect and we celebrate and we champion all things Florida to everyone. And it's kind of a relationship that goes back and forth because, you know, here we are in Florida with an embassy in D.C., so you can bring whatever we're doing here and celebrate it in D.C. at the home, and then it comes back to Florida. And if you're visiting there, you can go and stop in, and everyone is welcome.
The next time I'm in Washington, I will make a point to go stop by now that I am aware of this place.
You have to go. There's a big, we do a lot of things. And one of the things I really want to get across, because like you said, not a lot of people know about it, but what we really do, and I think at the beginning of your program, you had a great piece on, you know, being aware of what's being put out there. And so educating young kids about their civic responsibility. So we have two different programs with the McKay Civics Initiative. And what we did is we partnered with the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, and they created these programs that are for middle school age kids that are interactive, and they get together in assembly, and then they act out the different branches of the government. And you know, right now, it's really important that young people mm-hmm. get out there and vote have a voice. And you want to be educated about what's going on in your community, in your state, in your country. And Florida House is doing its job to help educate young people. And then we also have all these internships.
And so there's so much to learn about the Florida House on Capitol Hill. But I want to make sure, because we're short on time, about this big bash Sunday, March 1st, 4:30 p.m. The Florida House Board of Trustees is inviting you to come to the Kummer Museum to celebrate Florida's 175th birthday.
Who
Martha.
Knew, right?
That's right. That's wonderful. And yes, and there'll even be a tour of the Kummer through Adam Levine, who, as you know, will be leaving soon to go to the Toledo Art Museum. I also want to say no government money goes toward the Florida House.
Right.
Everything is donations. So it is very important for people to really join us on Sunday, 4:30 to 7 at the Kummer Museum, $125 per guest or $75, $35 and under. And it is going to be a wonderful event. Also, lots of wonderful auction items as well. And
have to make a note of the Rich Chamber Players.
Yes.
They have agreed to perform for us, and they are going to do a really great piece, and they're going to do some of this from their 18th season. It is amazing, and they are the only chamber music, classical music, all African-American chamber players in the country.
Yes.
And they've played all over the nation and are world known. And so we are so happy to have them present something from We the People.
Okay, so it's not too late to get your ticket for this Sunday at the Kummer Museum as the Florida House on Capitol Hill is celebrated. This is a celebration of the state's 175th birthday, and it's also a way to support the embassy Florida has in Washington, D.C. It's right behind the Supreme Court, a private home that's been converted into a cultural beacon for all things Florida. I'm assuming they give you some orange juice when you walk in the door, right?
We call it the golden juice of Florida, right? And that's every day. May 4th, that's when we change out our exhibits, mm-hmm. and that's we celebrate.
And how can we get tickets for this, Martha, at this late date? How can people get their tickets?
At this late date, we think the easiest way to do it is just come to the
go
door.
To the Kummer,
come to the
yes.
door and get them that way, and that would be the
and
best
it's
way.
And co-hosted by Martha Baker and Paula McGarvey and the Florida House trustees.
Excellent. And trustees Martha Barrett and Heather Moore are with me today. Again, this is Sunday at the Kummer Museum, 4:30 p.m. The Florida House on Capitol Hill. See, you learn something new every day on this show, right?
Thanks
to all of these amazing people in the community. Heather and Martha, always good to see you. Thank you so much.
Good to see you too. Thank you so much, Melissa.
Now, in a moment, some live jazz right here in studio, courtesy of the Jack's New Music Society and Players by the Sea. Don't go away.
On the next Fresh Air, the paradox of Facebook. How can a company be wildly successful, making tens of billions of dollars every year, while being scorned and distrusted by much of the American public? We'll talk with tech writer Stephen Levy about the company's enigmatic leader and its drive for expansion. Levy's new book is called Facebook, The Inside Story. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
As the coronavirus spread, Chinese authorities responded by closing the wildlife meat markets that may have been the source. Now they put a total ban on selling or eating meat from wild animals. Environmental conservationists say it's about time, but the new law will also affect workers employed in China's multi-billion dollar wildlife breeding industry. China's new wildlife consumption ban on the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Meet Kate. She quit her job in the wedding planning business last year.
I decided I wanted to go back to school after taking some time off, and that industry doesn't necessarily support the finances it takes to complete school, so I was starting to look at other options.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Those options? Yeah, she found them. Our series, The United States of Work, next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6, here on 89.9 WJCT.
Before the jury arrived at a verdict, the judge advised them not to see the case as a referendum on the Me Too movement. But Harvey Weinstein's conviction is likely to have far-reaching consequences in law and at work. I'm Todd Zwillick. Your stories, what this landmark case means for women now willing to speak up. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Players by the Sea is partnering up with a new nonprofit to make some beautiful music together, literally. The Jacksonville New Music Society was created by local jazz musicians to bring more new and creative music to town. And we're excited to say we're going to hear some of this great music live in studio in just a moment. But first, we welcome Alex Hernandez of the Jacksonville New Music Society and Jeremy Rakett with Players by the Sea. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Okay, so this is a partnership that you're kicking off. Jeremy, let's start with you. What's going to be happening?
Oh, well, this Friday, we will be featuring the Jacksonville New Music Society. It's actually our launch party with the new relationship that we have with them. Alex, who's sort of leading the group, has played in many musicals on our stage. And so he approached us and said, hey, you know, here's a concept. Here's our vision, here's the company, and can we work together?
So what are people going to see when they come out Friday night, Alex? Great jazz?
Absolutely. We have Adam Larson, who is an unbelievable jazz musician out of New York, an incredible pedagogue. The guy is an absolute saxophone luminary, unbelievable musician. He's going to be there February 28th, this Friday at 8 p.m. We're also facilitating to him to come into JU and UNF and do free masterclasses, because our goal is not only through performance, but through education. And that is very important to us.
What do you love about jazz?
Well, my degree is in jazz studies. I play saxophone myself. My degrees are in saxophone, jazz performance, and classical clarinet.
And so what do you love about this music?
Everything. I mean, it brings the community together. When you think about it, Jacksonville has one of the biggest jazz festivals in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an incredible scene for it in Jacksonville. And UNF has one of the top 10 undergraduate jazz studies in the United States. So in addition to that, there's so much wealth of talent here in Jacksonville. And so being able to use that and using the Jackson New Music Society as a vehicle for it and teaming up with Players by the Sea and combining platforms is truly going to bring together something incredible.
So this is the first of what will probably be many performances and events.
Absolutely.
Which is exciting.
Absolutely.
What else do you have up your sleeve, do you think? What else is after Friday night?
Well, as a matter of fact, our big project that we're shooting for on June 7th at 2 p.m. is the Beatles Reimagined, which actually you're going to hear a taste of that today. We're actually taking Beatles compositions and rearranging them for everything from string quartets to art songs to full big band and big band with strings.
Oh,
and
wow.
Today you'll hear Aaron Larin playing piano and Brittany Santos singing as a soprano singer. And what we're going to be doing, Here Comes the Sun. And it's going to be their rendition, original arrangement written by Aaron, incidentally.
So let's bring in singer Brittany Santos, pianist Aaron Larin. Hey, good morning, guys. Hi, guys. You can talk. Hi, guys. Oh, they didn't realize they were up. Good morning, guys. We are so excited to hear you perform. This is going to be your rendition of Here Comes the Sun, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so this is a preview of what you can hear Friday night at Players by the Sea as they launch their partnership with the Jacksonville New Music Society. Take it away, guys. Thank you.
Santos and Aaron Larian performing Here Comes the Sun. That is just a preview of the big launch party Friday night at Players by the Sea, the debut of the Jacksonville New Music Society. The concert will feature famous jazz saxophonist Adam Larson. Doors open at 6:30. The show's at 8. More information at playersbythesea.org. Thanks so much, guys. Alex Hernandez with the Jacks New Music Society, Jeremy Rake at Players by the Sea, and our wonderful performers. Have a great show. Thanks for bringing more music to the community. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
And that is our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. If you have questions or comments, we always value your feedback. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And again, a quick note, our crew is working to replace and repair an antenna here, which is why we've been on and off the air. We are working to get that done as soon as possible. If you listen to our live stream at WJCT.org or listen to us through the WJCT app, you can listen to all of our shows uninterrupted as we continue working on this. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We'll connect with you again at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.